Oh, yay.
Oh, yay.
Excuse me, didn't mean to interrupt you with the press.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Picture in the Paper this morning. Nice job, right now. Good job, huh?
Nothing live there, though.
Nice job, huh? Hey, she's got a good-looking guy, you know that?
We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 76 there, and what are our amendments?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as you remember, Senate Bill 76, a public hearing was held on that, which was chaired by Senator Courtney. And at that time, the Justice Department, as well as the bar, spoke in favor of the bill. However, there was a change to an amendment that needed to be done. That amendment is back at the dash 3. In short, the dash 3s address the consolidation language going to the juvenile code and say that when there is a pending juvenile matter as well as a domestic relations matter going to the custody or placement of a child, that they should be consolidated in front of the juvenile court, and that the juvenile matters shall be heard first before the domestic relations matters are heard. The DASPRI has also created protocols for when two counties are involved in the same case, and also stipulates that one judge will hear all those matters, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Brown. Two things. One is the committee is probably aware of this bill or the amendments are the product of a work group through the Oregon Law Commission, and the State Court Administrator's Office was part of that, as well as judges, defense attorneys, district attorneys, and the plethora of folks that are involved in juvenile court cases, and I would move the dash 3 amendments.
Thank you. Senator Brown moves the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 76. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Brown.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Brown moves Senate Bill 76 to the floor as amended, due pass. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Yes, so Senator Gordian.
You want me to carry it? Well, you want Senator Brown. Senator Brown, you carry it.
What? I
want to get my picture in the paper like the two of you.
Now, look. I am full service. I'm a workhorse. I'll do anything you ask me to do, Mr. Chairman.
Well, good. I'll keep that in mind.
I've got a
sweat. Yeah. Oh, tough bill you're carrying, Peter.
I carried a tough one this morning. It's called 686.
You did a good job. I'm going to take a couple of matters right now that are supposedly non-controversial in work sessions, and then we'll get to some others that will take a little work. We'll have a work session on Senate Bill 888. And if you'll pull up that file on the amendments, and what are we doing here?
Hello, I'm not.
No, I am. No controversy, just that.
Let's see.
Huh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we heard this bill on April 5th, and as originally drafted, it would exclude ODOT records not pertaining to motor vehicles from the prohibitions that currently exist on disclosure, prohibitions that were put in place after the passage of the Federal Driver Privacy Protection Act. Okay. And at the time of the hearing, there was some concern that the bill was actually capturing the intent without affecting capturing the intent in such a way that wouldn't violate the Federal Driver Privacy Protection Act. You have dash one amendment before you that I understand the county assessors and Department of Driver Motor Vehicle Services Division have agreed to, and what they do is specify that motor vehicle records do not mean a record pertaining to a manufactured structure, the whole issue being whether or not information that assessors receive from DMV regarding manufactured structures, what and how they can actually use it, perhaps redisclose that on their tax rolls, and whether or not in doing so they'd be in violation of the disclosure prohibition for this public information, for this information. Long-winded way of saying that what the amendments do, as I said, specify that motor vehicle records do not mean records pertaining to manufactured structures. And they also add an emergency clause.
Right. Questions? On the dash one amendment.
I move dash one amendment.
Thank you. Senator Courtney moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 888. Discussion? Objection? Ordered.
Move dash. I mean, Senate Bill 888 is amended to the floor. Due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 888 as amended to the floor. Due pass. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. We'll now go into a work session on Senate Bill 1157.
Attorney Mike Gunn,
please come forward. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Chairman, my name is Michael Gunn. I'm an attorney in Newburgh, Oregon.
And talk to us about Senate Bill 1157.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I've been practicing law for about 17 years. I do a lot of real estate work, a lot of it in the foreclosure area. As the chairperson knows, when you foreclose on a trust deed is a security interest. There are two types of foreclosure. One is a non-judicial, one is a judicial. Non-judicial foreclosure is governed by statute, ORS, part of Chapter 86. The fees that can be charged on a non-judicial foreclosure are statutory, a maximum of $550 on a residential foreclosure. On a commercial foreclosure, it's a reasonable fee. Why the differentiation, I don't know. But those fees have not been increased for many, many years. They've been at $550 for as long as I've practiced law. About 10 years ago, the legislature changed the statute. It used to be that the $550 could be charged in increments based upon the time period from the date of the sale. They were started out at $140, went up to $550. If the person cured, if they reinstated the trust deed within the first 30 days, it was $125 is all you could charge. That was changed by the legislature 10 years ago. There was no time period increments. So the maximum that can be charged is $550. That's way overdue for a modification simply based upon the time period. It doesn't matter if you have 50 encumbrance holders or one on there that you have to foreclose, you're capped at $550. So it's certainly nothing unreasonable. Theoretically, it should be changed to a reasonable amount, although I don't think that's probably too radical to go from a fixed amount to a reasonable amount at one fell swoop. But I contacted Representative Lewis about a year ago and talked to her about the situation and talked to Senator George, so that's how it arose. $1,000 is certainly not an unreasonable amount that can be charged as proposed by the bill.
Our colleague has a practicing attorney whose firm does foreclosure work. When we run into the limit, we always go over the $550, and our client has to pay those attorney's fees. It's just that you can't recoup it from the sale of the property or from the purchaser of the sale, so it's the person who loaned the money who's not made whole. So I think this is a moderate change in reasonable. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Chair then would move Senate Bill 1157 to the floor, due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. All carried. We'll now go to work session on House Bill 2481.
Mr. Chair and members, as drafted, this bill would amend the requirements that the Court of Appeals have to schedule argument within 42 days of appeal of a decision from LUBA, from the Land Use Board of Appeals. And if you remember, the discussion centered around the fact that the original bill simply deleted the 42-day time period and would allow the court by rule to establish an expedited schedule for oral argument on petitions for judicial review of those orders. At the last work session, Mr. Nass came forward and suggested that rather than go the way the committee was headed, and that was to give a specific time frame, increase from 42 days to, I forget what the number was,
49
days. Rather than do that, to amend the bill to adopt the same provision that exists right now for the court to waive the 91-day period after oral argument in which they have to decide a LUBA case. And the Adash 2 amendment mirror that provision, but then apply it to the period in which they actually have to schedule oral argument upon appeal or listening to the appeal, receiving the appeal of the LUVA decision. And if you look at the summary, the staff summary, I specify there the fact that the amendment actually require the court in making its determination to consider whether the case is so unusual or complex that 49 days is an unreasonable amount of time for the parties to brief the case and for the court to prepare oral argument, and whether the failure to hold oral argument at a later date would likely result in a miscarriage of justice. And that's the process which Ms. Knapp spoke about your last
question. They brought up the case, I think, that two senators were familiar with, including Senator Burdick, where just because of the length and complexity of the case, it was going to take a lot longer. So I think the amendments that are proposed in the Dash 2 make sense and still put constraints on the court to handle this promptly, but give discretion in those extraordinary circumstances where additional time is necessary.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, too, there was some concern that the court would just be able to go ahead and waive the time period because the docket was too full, and the amendments specify that or prohibit the court from waiving the time period because of general congestion of the court calendar or lack of diligent preparation or attention to the case by the court or any party to the case. So it would be based on the specific case itself rather than what the court calendar looked like.
Question concerning the Dash 2? Do we need to adopt the Dash 1?
No, the Dash 1's were your first go at the time period.
Thank you. And Courtney moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2481. Discussion? Objection? Thank you. Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2481, the floor is amended, do pass. Discussion? Objection, short. Senator Burdick, would you mind carrying that? Thank you for doing it. And Senator Courtney will carry Senate Bill 888. And I'm going to carry 117.
And Brown's going to carry
76. Right. We'll now we're in the work session on Senate Bill 379. And this is one that we've had before, so batted around a bit. And Senator Courtney had some questions, and they revised the language to take care of his concerns. So, Ann, what are we doing?
As originally drafted, it would have allowed the Attorney General to enter to negotiate or enter into a civil compromise when considering a criminal prosecution under antitrust laws. Since the AG is vested with jurisdiction for prosecuting the criminal as well as the civil violations of antitrust laws, there is some concern that there wants some clarification that they could actually compromise criminal pending or potential criminal charges and not be considered perhaps in violation of a disciplinary rule that prohibits attorneys from engaging in pre-trial pre-charging discussions of a proposed civil settlement of facts that could be viewed as a criminal or violation of the law. And the amendments that Senator Courtney suggested are before you in the Dash 1 version. And what they do is specify that the Attorney General may receive and respond to an offer to compromise pending or potential criminal charges. And they also specify that the measure applies to investigations, not enforcement proceedings as initially or originally drafted.
And the concerns dealt with the disciplinary rule of the Oregon State Bar 7-105, where you're not allowed to threaten criminal prosecution to obtain a civil compromise. I think the amendments address our concerns.
I move the Dash 1 amendment.
Courtney moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 379. Discussion? Objection?
Senate Bill 379 is amended before we do pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 379 as amended is moved to the floor. Do pass. Discussion? Objection?
Senator
Carrier. Senator Courtney?
I'll do it.
All right. We'll now go to a work session on Senate Bill 795. This one will not be as quick. If you recall, we've had a fairly lengthy hearing on this and discussed the bill. We had people that the Babcocks who didn't think the bill went far enough. One of the amendments addresses one of their concerns that now makes it, rather than optional for counties, mandatory. That has created now some opposition from some counties because they wanted it to be optional. We also, in the hearing, took testimony from Senator Yee and her constituents dealing with a change in the law to allow a humane society to operate in exclusive farm use, and we have those amendments in front of us too. And first of all, dealing with Senator Yee's amendments, you had contact from one county where this is located.
And the indication was that they have, frankly, visited every other avenue of potential resolution for their problem, and the only one left in their opinion, in their county council's opinion, is the amendment that we have for you, the -1 amendment that provides on page 7 of the page 7 of the -1 amendment specify that an animal shelter is an acceptable non-farm use of property in an ESU zone.
Earlier, we also looked at the language of changing. There was a reference to a kennel.
Yeah, an expanded definition of
a kennel. But you needed to go a little further in that because it's more than a kennel that the Humane Society operates. So just deleting the word dog from kennel wouldn't do it. Senator Yee has also put a 2-year sunset on this. Now, what that means is probably this will only affect one animal shelter in the state of Oregon, and that happens to be in this particular Northern Lynn County, because after 2 years, the exception that we're creating by the amendments would disappear.
That currently is not in the special amendment. She's brought that
extension. Right, she has new amendments.
Sure.
So we need those amendments. Mm-hmm. Senator Yee, does she have copies of those amendments? We might need to run off some additional topics. So while we're running off copies of that,
what are these amendments going to do, the last ones, to some of the major players? I've got mixed signals. I'm talking about the May
amendments. The sponsors of the bill don't object to her amendments as long as they don't muck up the bill as far as passing the House and the Senate.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Senator Turner.
Mr. Chair, I don't know when I would. It'd be pretty hard to put a dog kennel in a city neighborhood. It'd be also pretty hard to put it within the UGB because of the population growth around it. And because of the noise, I need the EFU as the place to put it at.
I can. So you're definitely a yes vote.
Sure.
Can I put it close to my ear?
Yes. In fact, you can probably use yours.
And what's the thing I could do on my garment? Cower.
Yeah. Oh, we had a yurt bill today on the Senate floor. That's why. Senator Corning.
I'll vote for it. I'm getting these funny vibrations from the audience. But it's the kind of, you know, you gotta go up the hill. And so I guess I'll be one to support it. I'm not clear whether or not it threatens the bill itself yet, which, I mean, I don't know. And so that we're playing a risky game here in terms of some of the signals, Mr. Chair, because obviously we want the main bill, but so I don't know.
I understand.
So I hope somebody knows what they're doing here.
Well, we'll do a vote count, and if it jeopardizes the bill, we might have it back in front of it.
Okay.
The other amendments of the bill are from the sponsors of the bill, and they are the -2, correct?
Yes. Right. And Mr. Chair, they specify, they specify that Section 2, 5, and 9 of the bill, which are the notice of hearing provisions, the progressive civil penalty, and the microchip implementation, will apply in all counties, that they're mandatory. There was some concern that the way the bill was originally drafted, the county could opt in or out of the entire act. And what the Dash 2s do is specify that those three sections are mandatory in any county that has a dog control program. And there are two other sections on those amendments, the sub 2 and sub 3 that Chuck Taylor is here from Legislative Council to talk about if he's so desire.
Okay. Are there questions on the Dash 2 amendments?
Okay. Oh, Mr. Chair, they also fill in the blank on the first page of the bill. And it's the draft. Okay. The bill is on front, how many days following the sending of a notice for a hearing, how many days are still in it.
I
did have a question about the Dash 2s. Basically, the Dash 2s make some aspects mandatory, but they still give the counties, they leave intact the county's authority to opt into going easier on the dog rather than opt out, rather than have it be mandatory.
Well, girls, why don't you come forward if you would, and if Senator Burdick could repeat her question, and if you could answer, please.
I know what my question is. I'm concerned about the issue that the counties raised about being forced to do things rather than have it be at their discretion. And is this where that issue is centered? I guess that was my question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Barrows. I represent the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. I'm sorry, Senator, I'm going to have to ask you to ask the question one more time. I missed one key word.
I'm a little behind the eight ball here.
Okay. No.
As I understood the description of the Dash 2 amendments, there are certain things made mandatory by this, like the microchips put in the dog, but then counties retained discretion in certain other areas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, that is correct. They do retain discretion in other areas, and even under the penalties section in Section 5, the counties have some latitude. This bill does not say counties, if a dog has chased once before and never injured, that you must impose this penalty. It gives them some options, a range of options. The only time that this Section 5 does not give them an option is if a dog kills for the second time. But if the scheme envisioned under this bill, Senator Burdick, works, that will never occur, that a dog would be gone out of the county long before it ever kills for the second time. That is our dream. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, for just a word about the Dash 2 amendments and the county's positions. To repeat from the earlier hearing, the Association of Oregon County's position on this bill is neutral. It has always been neutral. But Mr. Foltz has been a member of our work group for over a year, and when Mr. Babcock raised the question, and I think legitimately, about whether or not there were any mandatory provisions in this bill, and it was certainly always our intention to have them in there, I went back and talked to Chuck Taylor. Clearly, we had a miscommunication in our last conversation. I take responsibility for that. It was always the work group's intention that Sections 2, 5, and 9 would be mandatory to all counties that have animal control programs, thus these amendments. Now comes Lincoln County, who has never liked this bill and has always thought just if the world would be perfect if the law stayed the same and the counties can do whatever they want to do under the Legislative Council's opinion that was issued right after the last session. So their position of opposition is nothing new. Other counties have always had concerns about this bill. Some counties support it strongly, And because there are opponents in the county world and the supporters in the county world, thus the AOC becomes neutral. It's the way they operate. So there is no news here. Mr. Foltz and I sat down with Mr. Foltz after the last hearing, Mr. Chairman, and we agreed on the sections in 9A sub 1. We agreed on what sections should be made mandatory. And he agreed with them. That did not make them a supporter of the bill or an opponent of the bill. It made them neutral, but that was the deal we had agreed to in the work group. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
And the AIM Society is?
Strong. Well, Mr. Trusted is here, but I can say that, no question, he's strongly supportive, and the producing community is supporting it.
And one last thing. You said that Citizens for a Humane Animal did raise a point, and that these amendments in part are attempt to try to address that point. Is that correct?
Yes, but they are not satisfactory.
Okay.
To Mr. Babcock. They don't go far enough. My hope was, and he's here today, my hope was that by adopting this amendment
right. And
requiring it to be mandatory, that he and his organization would not go forward with the initiative. But it's my understanding from conversation he had with the council that it still intends to go forward with the initiative.
Okay.
That's my editorial comment. Other questions for Mr. Brewer?
Thank you for your clear answer. It was clearer than my question.
It wasn't clear, Senator. It was just I couldn't hear it.
Now, 2 and 3, I think. Now, so, Ann, we can forget about the -1 because we now have the -3.
No, Mr. Chair, you actually need to adopt both because what the -3s do is undo
the -1.
The -1 from 2 years.
Okay.
So you actually need to adopt both.
So we need to do 1, 2, and 3.
Correct.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 795.
Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 795. Discussion? Objection?
This is the land use one.
Right.
And I do object, Mr. Chairman.
Please note Senator Verdi has an objection. Senator, on the -1.
I move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 795.
Senator Courtney moves the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 795. Discussion? Objection?
I move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 795.
Thank you. Senator Courtney moves the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 795. In committee, the line change on this is, if you note that on line 21, page 7, we have a deletion then of the old language.
Right.
And we have an expiration where it expires January 1, 2002.
Correct. I'd look at SEC Taylor, though. I just noticed that these are hand engrossed. I wanted to make sure I don't know who changed these amendments, but I don't necessarily feel comfortable with the committee adopting them before I find out whether or not that's Mr. Taylor's change.
Is that your change, Mr. Taylor?
I believe what you want to do is restore the language that has been crossed out there, because the amendment in Section 14B... Chuck, did you hand engross these amendments?
No, I didn't. For the record, Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council. The -3s, as prepared, should have the land use statute, and they should amend that statute as it has already been amended by the -1 amendment. And what it does is to take out the it brackets out the on page 7, lines 21 to 24, takes out the subsection 2W that was put in by the -1 amendments. And then section 26, I see, has been changed by hand engrossing. As printed, it provided for this set of amendments to become operative January 1st, 2002. So until that date, the -1 amendments are going to be in effect, and then on January 1st, 2002, these amendments would become operative and would basically undo what the -1s did.
So we need to ignore the hand engrossing because the bold print was correct.
The bold print is correct, yes.
Okay.
hand and gross actually reverses the whole intent of the amendment.
Right. So Senator Courtney's motion is to adopt the bold language of Section 26 on page 8.
Adopt the dash 2's refreshes.
Yeah. Discussion. Objection?
Chairman, I won't object to these because if it has to go through, I just assume it expires in 2 years.
Thank you. So,
Jerry. I move Senate Bill 795 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 795 as amended to the floor due pass. Discussion? Yes.
Now, the county, just tell the counties have their option. They determine what the ordinance desires. They still are able to.
No, they're.
How this?
In some areas they have discretion, in other areas they don't. And so the county discretion is limited to the penalties listed in the bill. Is that correct?
But
I'm seeing it again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dave Barrow, Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. Under the Dash 2 amendments that you have adopted, there are three provisions in this bill that every county that has an animal control program must abide by. First is Section 2, which says the county must notify the dog owner that there's going to be a hearing. Section 5 is the penalty section, and it's the one that prescribes different penalties for different acts, progressive penalties, as it were, primarily against the dog owner, not so much against the dog. And Section 9 says that any county that has an animal control program must microchip a dog that is found to have chased, injured, killed, so that if the dog moved around, people can still determine that, yes, this is that dog. Because the penalties accumulate for the dog, but primarily the penalties accumulate for the owner. The monetary penalties accumulate for the owner and do not follow the dog. So if the dog's moved to another location, the person, the irresponsible dog owner, is still the one who bears the financial burden.
Right. Okay. And the landowner can still shoot the animal if they're chasing his livestock.
This bill does not speak to that section of the code.
Which was one of the calls I got from one of my constituents. Other questions? So the motion before us is to the floor do pass as amended.
Right.
Any other discussion? Objection? So ordered. Yes.
I should object to that, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Would you note that Senator Burdick objects? And why don't we list both Mayee and myself as the carrier. How's that? And we'll do a vote count. And Ms. Babcock, can I? If I could just, I'll hand the gavel.
Okay.
Be nice, sir. If I could. I know, I'll be right back.
Be nice, sir.
He's the one that
said
what to do on
that
bill.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, 9:30?
Yeah, he had some discussion.
Oh, okay. Okay. Who's up? Maybe Christy?
You could do 9:15.
Open the work session. Senate Bill 9:16.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the bill that you heard last week that would create a partial exemption from the housing fair housing laws for owners who rent rooms or units in their own occupied dwelling or house, and as originally drafted would have limited that to dwellings that provide living quarters for no more than 4 families. There was a lot of concern at the last hearing that the exemption was actually being limited to the very cases in which the proponents were trying to address. They have come back with the Dash 2 amendments that you have before you, but I do understand that the fair housing folks still have some concerns, as do others, to those amendments as well. And
well, let me talk for a moment about what my intent was.
Okay.
On the bill, I wanted to exempt dwelling units that had an access to the rental unit in some way, whether it be a basement apartment and someone had access through the basement into the other area where the homeowner lived, or if it were an upstairs apartment where there might be an external staircase, but there would also be an internal way down a staircase inside, because I think that defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do and would still cause homeowners to have that reasonable fear. So when I talked about the amendment and giving it some definition, that's what I was after. And is it the dash twos that are before us now, Ann?
Correct.
So this would say within or attached to a dwelling designed as a single-family residence if the owner actually maintains and occupies the dwelling unit. I'm not sure that does this. Because you could have, it could still be attached, and you could have an outside access with no inside access. And
still take advantage of the exemption.
Yeah, and that would still create the exemption.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me ask the committee, the way I describe it, do you find that to be a reasonable exemption?
Mr. Chairman, to me, the real test is whether the homeowner in the main home can securely lock themselves away from the tenant. In other words, if there's a door that they can lock that the tenant cannot unlock, to me that's the test. I have an apartment building myself, and this situation is a fourplex, and there are separate apartments, but basically all that's standing between two of the tenants is a locked door. And if you're in a house and you have an area, a granny flat or whatever, it can be locked away from the main dwelling and there's no sharing going on, no shared spaces going on, then I would want that treated the same as my building should be treated, which is, where the discrimination would be banned.
My concern with just a door separating where there's a lock is the lock can be picked.
They can in the building, too, in a regular apartment building. If you go down a hallway in any apartment building, you could say the same thing about any of those locks.
What's the feeling of the rest of the committee?
I can agree with you, Mr. Chair. You got a valid point. I've got an old home in Coquille that's capable of being divided into units like that. And your point. I agree with where you're trying to go.
In the human resources, I serve on that Ways and Means Committee, and it's interesting. The last few days, we've been dealing with vocational rehabilitation and senior and disabled citizens, and one of their problems is finding inexpensive housing. And frequently, all they can afford would be a granny-type flat. They couldn't afford a regular apartment, and so they commented on what a shortage there is of this type. And, of course, it's got to be, in that case, accessible to a handicap, which probably a basement may not, depending on how it's a daylight basement. But I see by doing something here, we solve a couple of problems. But let me ask Senator Nelson, Senator Courtney, where do you want to draw the line here?
I'd draw the line closer to the landlord and give him or her the more protection.
I'm on the fence right now, Mr. Chair. I'm not trying to play games with you. I'm listening to the comments. If you ask me to vote yes today, I can't vote yes today. You've made some distinctions. Jenny's made some distinctions. I'm trying to. I just, it's one time that I can't necessarily be there today. I just need some further clarifications with locks being picked, separate units, and access, and all that. And I'm serious about that because you said yourself this language doesn't appear to do what you want. Is that right, or it does appear there?
No, I think it's close, but the fact that it could be attached to a dwelling doesn't necessarily.
You can't put it out today anyway, right?
No, you'd have to come back with it.
Right. Hmm?
Right. Well, let's do this. We'll come back with two definitions, one tentative verdict and another the one that I proposed. And then we'll have a discussion, decide which way we're going to go. Okay? Sean and the others who have an interest in this, do you understand what we're getting to? And do you need any clarification? And in fact, if you want to work together on this, that would be appreciated by the chair. With that, we'll close the work session then on Senate Bill 916. And go to Senate Bill 397, and we'll open the work session on this. This has been before us a few times, and this is one where we have two elected officials that speak very closely about one another, but they don't agree on what this bill should say. And yeah, it's true. They're both attorneys, which could be part of the problem.
For the record, Mr. Chair, I want to point out that the amendments that are before you are not new. The same amendments that came before you before, our last work session. And I understand that they have been subsequent discussions, but I don't have any.
There are no new amendments. Now, I think we're in agreement we weren't going to adopt the dash one, so that just leaves us with the dash twos and the dash three. The dash two comes from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and the dash one from the Attorney General's Office, and
the dash three, Mr. Chair, do what the dash twos do in terms of adding BOLI to the list of agencies in the first section of the bill. That's all the dash threes do. The dash twos, in addition, eliminate limitations on legal arguments that are made by lay representatives, and then repeal the AG authority to veto the use of agency personnel to present.
Just 1 minute.
Sure.
The dash one amendments were from the Oregon Men's Association. You don't have those, at least not today.
But you made reference to a DOJ amendment?
Department of Justice.
Uh-huh.
Those are the dash three.
Oh, okay.
No.
No?
No.
Who?
I don't have any amendments from the Department of Justice.
The Attorney General for the dash three, isn't it?
No.
What do I have AG on?
Because that's wrong.
So are you.
Try it. The dash threes are not the AG's amendment.
All right.
When we initially talked about this bill, there was some discussion about the fact that the Attorney General would likely not object to simply adding BOLI into that list of agencies that can use the lay case presenters. And so, knowing that, we have the dash three amendments drafted, but they didn't come from the AG. They were simply directly.
I'm going to move the dash three amendments. How about that? Does that help?
Yeah. Well, that I think we're generally consensus on putting in the dash three.
No, we're looking at strangely.
Which would be the light. But
you're still not going to put
it. At the last work session, I believe it was testimony either of the labor commissioner himself or Mr. Tiffany that if it's the dash threes and nothing else, that's, and please correct me if I'm misstating his point, but that he indicated that it didn't go far enough for them. Because it didn't do anything to, it just didn't deal with the limitations on legal arguments that the bill proposed. And that their case presenters may not be attorneys, but they get involved in making legal arguments that would under this bill drafted be impermissible for a non-attorney to make.
Paul, would you come forward for a second? And my question would be, adding the subparagraph K under subsection 1, would that be a benefit to Bowling?
That's the dash 3, Paul.
Mr. Chair, Paul Tiffany, Government Relations Manager for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Adding the K amendments would I suppose they would indicate what we do now.
Right. Yes. All right. So let's, the motion is to move the dash threes, and then we'll discuss the other amendments, mm-hmm. which that would simply add the subparagraph K, correct? Discussion on the dash threes. Objection. Motion passes. Now, a name you might as well come up again to.
Please, Mr. Chair, if I might, on the dash two amendments the last time we met, we indicated that if there was a desire of the committee to adopt lines 1 through 9 of those amendments and not the rest of the amendment, that would be fine with us. And that would be, of course, that would be the primary reason for our testimony in the first place, and that was to allow us to make legal argument.
That would be then the deletion on page 2 of lines, basically lines 8 through 18, and then also on line 2, the deletion of lines 31 through 45.
Mr. Chair, we were just... okay.
But I'm looking at the wrong dash.
No, because he said he drew a line here.
Okay.
He's saying that lines 1 through 10. 1 through 9?
That's, lines 1 through 9, right. Mm-hmm. Not 10.
Not 10, all right.
Of the amendment.
Right.
Dash
the
amendment.
Of the amendment.
Dash 2. Everything in the dash 2 amendment starts with 1 through 9 he wants. Nothing else he wants. Starting with 10, which says to meet line 31 through 40. Is that right?
Correct. And the effect of that is on your hand and gross bill on page 2 to delete line 8 after record and all the way through line 18. And what that is the limitation on the argument that a lay case and a lay representative could make.
Amy, what do you think about that? You've got to identify yourself.
Amy Branson, Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Justice. The Attorney General would be opposed to that. Basically, the issue that we see is that legal argument really should be within the purview of the Attorney General, and to allow this type of unlimited legal argument to be made by agency representatives, we think would place the state at risk with respect to maintaining a consistent legal position for the state.
Well, I know that we need to move the bill.
Well, yeah.
But another thing too is, at one point, didn't he delete the emergency clause, section 11?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, we're in the last. Oh, you were in World War III?
No, I heard you were causing it.
No.
Okay.
World War III.
I don't. What's the justification for an emergency clause?
Basically, the bill as originally proposed by the Attorney General is merely to codify some existing provisions in the Oregon Attorney General's model rules. And there's been some question raised by legislative counsel as to whether the current definition of legal argument, which is the provision on page 2 of the bill from lines 10 through 18 that clarify the scope of legal argument permitted by an agency representative. Legislative counsel suggested that may be beyond the scope of the current APA. Therefore, the amendment was proposed to clarify that. Certainly to the extent that the Attorney General believes that the current APA already authorizes this scope of legal argument by agency representatives, there's no emergency. To the extent that legislative counsel has serious concerns about this and feels that agencies currently using agency representatives may be acting beyond the authorized scope of the statute, there would be an existing emergency as long as they continue to do that.
I don't think that qualifies for what legislative leadership wants as an emergency. But I don't want to hold up the bill for that. That can come out on the House side. Pardon? Can we? I'm the chair. We can do that conceptually.
Sure.
We're getting loose here.
Oh, wow.
So I don't want to have another hearing on this bill. I don't feel...
What are the dash to amendments?
Strong or... Well, wait. We've already amended, so...
No, have we?
No, well,
I know what
we're on the line.
Are you going to go along with that?
I don't know.
Because they were saying no, and they were saying yes. I figured you were saying yes, let's do the whole amendment. That's what your body language said to me.
We're not communicating.
Okay, then I withdraw my motion.
The current Attorney General administrative rules recite what you have online. 8 through 18 in page 2, right?
Yeah, roughly paraphrased, it's correct.
And I'm sorry, committee, I don't have a clear consensus in my mind here as I stumble. And I remember the first testimony coming from Commissioner Roberts about what currently happens with his lay representative in terms of how they handle the case and what they're authorized and not authorized to do.
We're talking about law clerks and agency reps.
Right. All right.
I got beat up enough on expanding the statute from the Department of Justice that I did not even bother talking to the Oregon State Bar.
Pardon?
I said... After talking to the Department of Justice, I got beat up enough that I didn't even bother talking to the Oregon State Bar about expanding it to lay representatives. So.
Oh. Okay. Well, the chair is struggling. I want to move the bill.
Chair?
Yes.
Why do you need the dash 2 amendments?
Well, you don't need them unless you want to provide more flexibility to the lay representative. And that's the crux of the matter.
I tried everything and I can't get to the receiver, so I'm not going to do it.
Well, let's if the committee, none of you have a burning desire on this one or another, if I sense our lack of discussion here and pounding on the table.
Well, I tried every move I could make. And you just scratched your head and said, I'm not reading your bio.
No.
So what am I going to do? Don't we just move the bill?
No. We've adopted the dash 3. Let's conceptually... Let's conceptually, we're going to move the bill. We're going to conceptually delete in the
emergency clause.
The emergency clause. Senator Courtney moves to conceptually delete Section 11, the emergency clause. Discussion, objection. Yeah, let's move the bill and let them fight in the House over it. I don't have a good answer.
Senate Bill 397 as amended for the defense recommendation.
Discussion, objection.
Before you adjourn,
yes.
I would like to vote on a couple of bills since I was out giving an update.
Without objection.
Without objection, I do not believe it changes the outcome. I'd like to vote aye on Senate Bill 379, 795, 888, 1157, and House Bill 2481.
Without objection.
While we're at it, I would like to vote aye on Senate Bill 1157 and Senate Bill 888.
Without objection, so ordered. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you. We got through about eight bills in work session.